Wake Up America, time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, maker of the famous Heinz 57 varieties, presents Information Please. And each week, four experts try to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our decision as to who shall be paid. Any question used brings you, courtesy of H.J. Heinz Company, $10 in war stamps and a copy of the Encyclopedia Britannica World Atlas. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information Please is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. Now, here's our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, before introducing the experts, I want to make a special announcement that will interest all of you. Beginning April 3rd, that's 2 weeks from tonight, Information Please will broadcast 1 hour earlier, but on Monday as usual, and on this same network. Remember, the change in time starts April 3rd. Until then, you'll be hearing us at this time. Tonight, Information Please continues as usual in its carefree and unrehearsed manner. Our board of experts is evenly divided between literature and politics. We have with us John Kieran and Franklin P. Adams on the one hand, and on the other, two eminent legislators. Senator Alvin W. Barkley of Kentucky, the majority leader in the Senate, and Senator Theodore Green of Rhode Island, co-author with Senator Lucas of the Soldiers' Vote Bill. We're going to begin, gentlemen, with an off-the-record question. If you miss on this, it will not cost anybody any money, and no encyclopedias will go out. I'm going to repeat a question that we used a long time ago. And after I get your answers, I'll tell you why. I'm going to ask you to obey me implicitly. This will not hurt. Please close your eyes, gentlemen. Close them. Adam, don't you know the difference between a closed eye and an open eye? This won't take very long. Now, will you describe the color or the pattern of the tie you are wearing? Mr. John Kieran, how about yours?
I'm wearing a yellow tie with a dark triangulated pattern on it. Is that right?
Well, it isn't triangulated.
Well, it's squares or whatever.
Well, it's round.
It's a yellow tie.
That's pretty good. Now I'm going to ask Mr. Adams to describe his tie.
Well, that's pretty tough because it has most colors in it, and it's a lot of stripes. There's a red and blue and yellow, and...
That's enough.
It's a beauty.
Well, that's what you say. That's approximately right. It seems to me from here to be red and yellow and black rather than blue, but it may be a deep navy blue. And now, Senator Green, could you help us out with a description of your tie?
Well, mine's a Scotch woolen tie, sort of a plaid, dark blue and brown.
By golly, that's absolutely right. These gentlemen actually look at their ties in the morning. Now, I'm saving Senator Barkley for the last because I understand the Senator has a hobby of buying every tie he likes, whether he needs it or not. Is that true, Senator?
That's true.
Well, then you should know a great deal about ties. What kind of tie are you wearing?
Well, I have on a tie with a blue and black mixture. It's not flowered, but semi-squares. About half as much blue as of black. It costs me a dollar.
Gentlemen, you may open your eyes.
Quite a profit on it.
That's four ties right out of four. And we have a question from John L. Higgs to begin our regular program. John L. Higgs of Youngstown, Ohio, which is also about ties, as it happens. And Mr. Barkley, you're a tie collector. Here are three more ties for you. What happens when there's a tie vote in the Supreme Court? Anyone may raise his hand on this. Senator Barkley?
There's a tie vote, that means that one of the justices is not voting, and
Agreed.
Therefore it would be a nullity.
Well, now, is that true?
Well, a tie vote may affirm a lower court by refusing to reverse it by a majority vote.
In other words, if there is a tie vote in the Supreme Court, is the lower court's decision sustained?
That's true.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Now, one of the justices might be ill or absent for some other reason. Yes, the decision of the lower court is sustained. Now, what happens in case of a tie in basketball? I don't think the senators are really required to know that. But, Mr. Kieran, this is more or less in your department. What happens if there's a basketball tie?
Well, they used to play sudden death in the old days, but I haven't kept up with recent basketball. I don't know what they do now.
Mr. Adams, do you have any...
I think they play another play until it isn't a tie anymore.
How long a period of time do they play?
That I don't know.
Guess.
5 minutes.
That's right, Mr. Kieran.
Very good.
It's like pulling teeth. That's quite right. That isn't compulsory, I don't think, Mr. Kieran, but they generally do that. Now, suppose there's a tie vote in the House of Representatives. You don't mind talking about the House, Senators, for a second or two? Yes? Senator,
if there's a tie vote in the House of Representatives, the motion upon which the vote is taken is defeated. It cannot be untied by the Speaker unless he has declined to vote up to that time. He has the right to vote as a member of the House.
Yes.
But not to vote twice to untie.
That's it. Yes, if he's already voted, then the bill is defeated.
Yes.
That's right, Senator Green?
That's right. It's not true of the Senate.
No, what happens in the case of the Senate?
The Vice President has a deciding vote.
Has a deciding vote.
The Vice President is asleep at the hotel and doesn't get there, it's still defeated on the tie vote.
Well, we got three ties out of three on that, gentlemen. Try this one from Ralph T. Catterall of Richmond, Virginia. Can you give us the literary source of these very bloodthirsty and violent lines that I'm going to quote to you? Get two out of three. The first is, kill him, kill the umpire. Where, Mr. Adams?
That is from Ernest L. Sayers, Casey at the Bat. That's
quite right, Mr. Adams. And can you quote the whole line? That begins,
kill him, kill the umpire.
Shouted.
I forget.
Someone. Mr. Kieran? Do you know that poem by heart?
It's likely they'd have done it unless Casey had raised his hand like that.
Kill him, kill the umpire, shouted someone on the stand, and it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. Senator Green, are you familiar with the works of Ernest Lawrence Sayer, who wrote this poem, Casey at the Bat?
I'm sorry to say I'm not.
Well, it's really useless for a man who's running for the Senate. You don't have to know those things. How about this one? Damn your eyes. Who said that? What's it from? Damn your eyes. Violent line. Mr. Adams, I'm certain you know that somehow. It seems to me you once quoted it to me.
I may have meant it.
I know just how you feel. Well, it's from a... It's from
a song. It's from a song.
That's quite right. Sure. Make up a song with that.
I forget the man's name.
Samuel Hall. Now, give us the song.
Something about, my name is Samuel Hall, damn your eyes.
My name is Samuel Hall, and I hate you one and all. You're a gang of muckers all, damn your eyes. I think we ought to give you full credit on that, Mr. Adams. How about, chuck him out, the brute. Chuck him out, the brute. Mr. Kieran.
Tommy Atkins by Kipling.
That's quite right. And can you give us the lines?
That Tommy this and Tommy that and chuck him out, the brute, but it's thin red line of heroes when the guns begin to
Something
shoot.
Something like that. Very good. A savior of his country when the guns begin to shoot. Well, we're pretty good tonight.
Aren't you afraid they'll take out your radio if you keep on this line much longer?
It's at this point that we stop and go on to a consideration of the presidents of the United States. That's dignified enough, isn't it, Mr. Senator Green?
Great improvement.
Harry Z. Wolf of New York City sends this one in. Get two out of three. Name the presidents in the following cases. Here, two presidents had the same Secretary of Commerce. That is, he served under two different presidents. Who were those presidents? Senator Barkley.
Harding and Coolidge.
Quite right.
With Hoover as Secretary of Commerce.
Exactly right, Senator Barkley. Very good. Now, can you name the president in this case? Or the presidents, rather. Here are three presidents who have the same Secretary of the Treasury. Little on the conservative side, perhaps. The senator again. Senator
Harding, Barkley. Coolidge, and Hoover.
That's quite right.
With Mellon as Secretary of the Treasury.
Yes, that's quite right. Wasn't he the one who was the greatest secretary since Alexander Hamilton?
With one exception.
Oh, there was an exception.
Yes.
Who was the exception?
McAdoo.
McAdoo.
Yes.
Well, that fixes McAdoo and Mellon's reputation forever.
According to the friends of each.
Yes. Glad you mentioned that. Now, here is one president who had an entirely new cabinet in his second term. That's a tricky one. An entirely new cabinet to Senator Barkley.
Over Cleveland.
Senator Barkley, you're very good at this game.
It's no game.
Well, you're in this for real, are you? And how did that occur? How did it happen that he had?
Well, there was one term intervened between Cleveland's first and second term.
Yes.
And when he was elected the second time, which was its third race, he picked a new cabinet.
Very good. Admirable fellow, Adams, this senator, don't you think? Very, very good.
Wonderful. Always liked him?
Try this one from Rita Carroll of Toronto, Canada. This is all about coffins, gentlemen. A dismal subject, but then we can go on to another question afterward. What is meant by the flying coffin? The flying coffin. Has any of you ever heard that phrase? The flying coffin? I see, Senator Green and Senator Barkley, that neither of you ever visits the House of Representatives. So are you allowed to enter those sacred precincts?
I go swimming once a year
and go over there. Senator Green is very democratic. Well, the flying coffin is another name for the loudspeaker in the House of Representatives. It has a from the shape and position of the loudspeaker. I don't know what the name of the loudspeaker is in the House of Representatives. I could name several. But that's what the flying coffin is. That gives us one wrong. Now, what is the coffin corner? The phrase, the coffin corner, does that mean anything to any of you, Mr. Curran?
Well, the coffin corner is any one of the four corners of a football field.
Why is it so called? That's quite right.
Well, it's supposed to kill off the chance of the receiving team when they get a ball in that coffin corner.
Yes, you can't.
Try to kick out of bounds within the 10-yard line, and it really puts them in a hole.
That's right. Quite right. And now the final coffin is coffin varnish. What is coffin varnish? Coffin varnish? Something, Mr. Adams, you doubtless have never heard of.
Never heard of it.
Strong drink is the answer. Strong drink. Also known as coffin varnish. Well, we only won right. That means Heinz 57 sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Miss Carroll and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now here's a challenge put to our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, by a gentleman who takes exception to Ben's pronunciation of tomato. In Philadelphia, he writes, we say tomato. What about it, Ben?
Well, the gentleman's well within his rights, for the word comes from the ancient Aztec tomatl, pronounced with a broad Philadelphia A. But we've looked it up in several dictionaries, including Webster and Funk and Wagnall, and in each one, tomato with a hard A, as in potato, comes first, which suggests that that's the preferred pronunciation. But either or either is correct. And however we say it, there's no controversy about the joy tomatoes bring to the table. One of the world's most savory testimonies to their versatile flavor is Heinz tomato ketchup. Into one glorious sauce, Heinz ketchup blends the fresh tang of luscious vine-ripened tomatoes, the seasoning of rare pungent spices, sparkling vinegar, and pure cane sugar. It's a whole medley of flavors, a ketchup with a taste so distinctive, so exciting, you'd recognize it blindfolded. And whatever food a dash of Heinz tomato ketchup blesses, you'll pronounce extra good.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. And now, gentlemen, will you try this one from Leni M. Merrick of Billings, Montana. What have the following in common? There are going to be three parts. We have to get all. Wing, ladder back, comb back. Wing, ladder back, comb back?
Chairs.
Very good. I have two senatorial hands up at once. Senator Green, can you describe a wing chair to us briefly?
Yes, a wing chair is a large armchair with sides. They look like wings, so the person protected from the wind in three directions.
Perfect. And I don't know what I
have something in the Senate.
I think it would take more than three sides
to protect
the Senate.
Be
effective.
Now, what have the following in common? The 8 immortals, the 100 sons, and the 500 Lohans, L-O-H-A-N-S. What have they in common?
They all belong to the Buddhist theology.
That's quite right, Senator Green. What are these people?
Well, the eight arahats were they correspond. They were disciples of Buddha, very much corresponding to the disciples of Christ in the Christian religion.
Yes. And the 100 sons? You say these are all connected with Buddhist theology. Where would we find the figures of the 8 immortals and 100
saints? Well, you'll find them in sculpture and in painting, as you find the saints, Christian saints, and decorations of the churches and so forth.
That's precisely right, Senator Green. The Lohans, what are Lohans?
The Lohans were a lesser order of the same character as the Arahats, the saints.
Yes, the holy men,
Holy men. Well, more than that, they were immortals.
Yes. Mr. Adams, don't you find it interesting to be instructed by a senator in this way?
I certainly do. You take the low hands and I'll take the high.
You'll never make the Senate, Adams. And now, what have the following trio in common? Free, heroic,
blank. Free, heroic, blank, Mr. Adams.
Verse,
yes. What's free verse?
Free verse is verse that doesn't rhyme, as in the case of Amy Lowell.
Yes, and doesn't have any fixed metrical pattern. Not only doesn't rhyme, but what else?
It doesn't scan, and it ain't very good.
That's personal prejudice, Mr. Adams. Just because you know how to rhyme. I don't know where you picked that up, by the way. Lots of good verses have been written in free verse. Isn't Samson Agonistes by John Milton, Mr. Kieran, written in free verse?
Well, I don't know. He wrote mostly blank verse.
I think it's scan.
You think it's scan?
Much of Walt Whitman was.
Yes, written in free verse.
That's right, I apologize.
See, you made him back down, Senator. We need you.
To come to defense of the American institution.
and heroic couplets are what? Heroic couplets. Mr. Kieran?
Well, I don't know how to define them.
Well, Mr. Adams?
Pope.
Pope wrote them. They're rhyming couplets in iambic pentameter, and blank verse, of course, is unrhymed iambic pentameter. And that gives us 3 out of 3 and sends us on to this question from Mrs. Ann W. Davis of Downington, Pennsylvania. Can you recite for us, let's say, 3 lines, famous lines of verse or prose, that include words that are also the names of generals of any war, past or present? In other words, pick a general whose name is used in a line of verse or prose. That doesn't mean the name itself, but any name which common noun, perhaps. Let me give you an example. In the Revolutionary War, there was a General Howe on the other side.
That's right.
Well, "How are the mighty fallen," a line from the Bible, would be a very appropriate response if you had the card in front of you, which enables you to read it off, as in my case. Mr. Adams.
Well, the Vice President of Iowa is frequently known as Corn Wallace.
The Vice President. That's a far fetch.
Incidentally, he sends me a lot of very fine corn seed.
And you are paying him back in kind. I can see that.
They're about due now.
Mr. Kieran.
"He leadeth me into green pastures." General Greene from the Revolutionary War conducted the campaign in the South.
Perfectly right. Yes, there would be one. Can you think of any other?
There's a line in Gray's Elegy.
Keep going.
About the cows coming slowly over the lee.
Generally,
very good.
Yeah.
I don't see why you're wasting your time in the Senate, Senator Barkle. You could do this sort of thing. It's easier. Mr. Adams?
"This is the forest primeval."
General Old Bedford, Forest. Nathan Bedford.
General Forrest.
Very good. Yes, that gives us. And have you any others, Mr. Kieran?
Well, it's just a little line. "Grant me that, my mouse of virtue." That's from Twelfth Night, General Grant.
General Grant, yes. Senator Barkley?
"Good enough, Morgan, for any man." That's General Morgan of the Confederate.
Very good, yes. And a current general, there's a pause in the day's occupation that is known as the Eisenhower.
Ah.
How about this one, gentlemen, from Glenn Collard of Graham, Texas? This will be a musical question. Light music. Get all on this. Suppose you heard these campaign songs. What presidential campaign since World War would it suggest to you? We're going to have 3 sets of 2 songs each played. Let's have the first set. Now, Senator Green?
The last one was Al Smith's campaign.
Well, now,
campaign song.
And what was the first one? Against whom was Mr. Smith running at that time?
Roosevelt.
Senator Barkley?
Hoover.
Hoover, yes. And what campaign
was it? Iowa. He was from Iowa, and that's the Iowa song.
Oh, you're about 1,800 miles out. Mr. Kieran.
He was a former football manager of the Stanford University football team. It's from California.
Yes, the
California, here I come.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to hear tomorrow from both California and Iowa, Senator Barkley.
Yeah.
Yes,
I was wrong there, I admit it.
It's nice to hear a senator admit that, Mr. Adams.
Does the senator yield?
Well, what to?
To our junior members here, Senator Adams and Senator Kieran. Yes, it's the Smith-Hoover campaign of 1928. We were a little ragged on that. I'm going to call that wrong. Now, how about the next songs, Mr. Kahn? Yes, Senator Barclay?
That was the Cox-Harding campaign in 1920.
That's exactly right. Why do you say that, Senator
Barclay? Because both of them were from Ohio.
Yes, and what was being played?
Beautiful Ohio.
Yes, it was played twice. I don't want you to think that Mr. Cohen stutters. Yes, because both Cox and Harding, as the Senator recollects for us, were from the sovereign state of Ohio. And now the third set of songs, Mr. Cohen. Was that your hand, Senator Barclay?
Well,
or do you yield to Senator Adams over here?
I yield to Senator Adams.
Very well, Senator.
Well, the second one was Mr. Al Flanden's campaign song.
Yes, quite right. What one was it? What
song? Oh, Susanna.
Oh, Susanna, and the first part of it, Mr. Flanden at that time was running against Senator Barclay.
Roosevelt.
Yes. What year?
36.
Yes. Well, that gives us only 2 out of 3. Heinz, 57, sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Cullard and a set of the Britannic. Easy way to learn American history. Now, here's one from Helen E. Master of Galesburg, Michigan. Again, I think we should get all. Name two institutions or groups who were traditional antagonists in English history. Traditional antagonists in English history. Oh, for a long period of time, Mr. Kieran.
Why, houses of York and the house of houses of Lancaster.
Yes, and you...
War of the Roses.
Yes, you find their history... Where and what?
In Shakespeare's works.
Historical plays of Shakespeare, yes. And what groups or institutions or places were antagonists in traditionally in Roman history? In Roman history. Mr. Kieran?
Well, in late Roman history, the Guelphs and the Ghibellines.
I hadn't thought it would rather be medieval history. I was thinking of classic Rome. Senator Green.
The Empress and the Senate.
Well, they were sometimes in opposition. I perhaps haven't worded my question properly. Mr. Adams?
You mean the patricians?
No, I was thinking of Rome and Carthage. But I should have said that they were not both in Rome. Of course, they weren't. Senator Green, you would have given me the answer if I had put it in a different way.
The Romans and the Greeks were frequently in contest, but...
Yes, but not traditional enemies in war after war, as in the case of Rome and Carthage. How about two institutions groups who are traditional antagonists in American life? Well, maybe thousands come to mind. Mr. Senator Barclay.
Well, the Democrats and Republicans, for one.
Yes, that's quite right. I was thinking of smaller groups than either of those. Though, Mr. Kieran?
New York Giants and Chicago Cubs.
Well, you might name many others, Harvard and Yale. Yeah. What feuding families are traditional antagonists, Mr. Kieran?
The Hatfields and the McCoys.
Hatfields and the McCoys, yes. But I think we got only 2 out of 3 on that. Heinz 57 sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Miss Master and a set of the Britannica. Our Heinz reporter looks as if he's taking another mental stroll down memory lane. How about it, Ben Grauer?
Of all the fond and fragrant memories of childhood, nothing surpasses the recollection of ketchup-making time in Grandmother's kitchen. There were the bushel baskets heaped high with great red tomatoes still sparkling with dew, a little bag of pungent spices neatly tied up in cheesecloth, a heavy iron kettle bubbling on the stove, and Grandma hustling back and forth, her cheeks flushed becomingly. Ketchup-making, you see, was a ritual with her, just as it is with Heinz chefs today. In fact, they even follow a prized old recipe just like the one your grandmother treasured. And the tomatoes, well, if you saw them, you'd agree that aristocrat is just the word for them. Bred from a special strain developed by over 50 years of scientific research, Heinz aristocrats are big, ruddy fellows, plump with sun-mellowed goodness. And the spices that add their racy zest to Heinz tomato ketchup are the finest in the world. To dress up leftovers and to make meats go further, always keep a bottle of Heinz tomato ketchup on hand.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. And by the way, if you want some copy for next week, see if it isn't aristocrat, Ben, instead of aristocrat. I'm not so sure about that. Try this one from Millicent Shuker of Forest Hills, New York. And here, I think we should get 2 out of 3. Who wrote Lives of These Two People? Bismarck and Napoleon. One man wrote Lives of Both. Senator Barclay.
Emil Ludwig.
Emil Ludwig, quite right. Who wrote Lives of Both Thais and Joan of Arc? Same man wrote Lives of those rather widely differing characters. Mr. Adams?
Might have been Mark Twain.
He wrote one of Joan of Arc, but he didn't write one of Thais, at least not to my knowledge, Mr. Kieran.
Was an English essayist, De Quincey?
Wrote about Joan, but I think did not write about Thais. You can guess, Mr. Adams. Anatole France is the answer. He wrote Life of Both of Them. That's one wrong. Now we have to get the next one right. Who wrote Lives of both General Grant and General Washington? Same man, Senator Barclay.
Woodward.
Woodward, yes. Very good. Mr. Adams, were you going to tell us Woodward?
W.E. Woodward, I would have said.
I bet the senator would have said so, too. That gives us 2 out of 3. Try this one, Senator Barclay. You had something you wanted to
tell? No, I was just chuckling.
Good audience, too. Try this one from Harry I. Gilbert of Boyertown, Pennsylvania. And I guess we should get all on this. In what sport is a participant rewarded if hit by a ball? Mr. Kieran.
In baseball?
Yes. So,
if he doesn't get a broken bone, I'd call it a reward. He's allowed to go to first base.
Yes, quite right. Now, in what sport is a participant penalized if hit by a ball? Mr. Adams?
Lawn tennis.
Yes, the point is lost by the man who is hit. Mr. Kieran?
Well, its side might be penalized or penalized, as you say, in several other sports. Golf, for instance, and football. If it gets in the way of a ball under certain circumstances,
is that
it hurts his team.
Is that right, Mr. Adams?
That's right.
Okay. How about this one? In what sport, exclusive of boxing, may participants hit one another without reward or penalty? Sounds a little like this house.
I think that's wrestling, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Senator Barclay. Wrestling. That gives us 3 out of 3 and sends us on to this one from Mrs. Howard Boyd of Fullerton, Pennsylvania. Again, get 2 out of 3. Near what famous river might you have encountered these people? The Cossacks. Near what river might you possibly find them? Senator Green.
Dniester.
How do you say that?
Dniester.
I've always wanted to know how it was pronounced. I think that's wrong, but I'm glad to get the pronunciation. Senator Barclay?
Volga.
I think, Mr. Kieran?
The Don.
The Don, yes. I think the Cossacks are associated mainly with the Don. Would you care to argue the point, Senator Green?
No.
Senator Barclay?
No.
Ain't kind of easy to overawe, Mr. Adams.
I think you'll find some Cossacks close to the Volga, though, but probably the majority of them are on the Don.
I think they're mostly associated with the Don. How about the Copts, C-O-P-T-S? Now, what famous river might you have encountered then, Mr. Kieran?
Be along the Nile.
Why is that so?
That's where the Coptic civilization was.
Quite right. Are there some remnants of that Coptic civilization today, Mr. Kieran?
I haven't been there. I don't know.
Mr. Adams?
Sure, there's a Coptic language left.
Yes, there is a Coptic language left. And where, near what famous river...
Policeman might... speaking.
What river would you associate with the Magyar peoples? The Magyars. Senator Barclay. The Danube. Any question about that, Mr. Kieran?
No, I was going to agree heartily.
Well, that gives us 2 rivers out of 3 rivers, and I'm afraid that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Senator Barclay, and thank you, Senator Green, for dropping in this evening and helping us out with the fun. Tonight, H.J. Hines Company has paid out $114 in war bonds and stamps and 2 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, we will welcome as our guest the distinguished musician and piano virtuoso, Mr. Artur Rubinstein. Remember, please, to send your questions and the correct answers. Don't forget to send the correct answers. You sometimes do forget them.